This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I'm Josh Hammer, and this is America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our country and our American way of life. On today's show, we take a deep dive into where else but the first day of Donald Trump's first criminal trial in the courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan in New York City. How did it go? What headlines are we taking away from the first day of this thing? What is our overall projection as to what this looks like in the weeks and potentially months ahead? All of that and more in today's deep dive. Then later on the show, in today's closing argument, news breaking just this morning that police in Brussels, Belgium, are shutting down or at least heavily disrupting and disturbing the National Conservatism Conference currently being held in Brussels, Belgium. I myself am a research fellow at the Edmund Burke Foundation, which puts on these National Conservatism Conferences. I actually spoke at this very conference, NatCon Brussels, 2 years ago in 2022. Some breaking news from across the pond. What does it potentially mean for the state of democracy in Europe and on the European continent? All that and more in today's closing argument. But for now, as always, we start by going around the horn. We start on the domestic front with a national story, which is that cable news and social media was filled yesterday with lots of galling images and appalling videos of so-called pro-Palestinian protesters. I really call them pro-Hamas or pro-jihadist anarchists, shutting down large swaths of highways and bridges and public facilities, just engaging in fairly obvious subversive behavior all across these United States yesterday. There was footage outside of O'Hare Airport in Chicago of people having to get out of their Ubers and walk for hundreds of yards with their luggage just to try to make their flights because the roads were shut down there. They shut down the Golden Gate Bridge out in San Francisco. You had dozens of people who were arrested there. They were all over New York City yesterday. They were here in Florida, where I live, although God bless Florida. We actually handled them the right way. There were lots of arrests made. They did not disturb anybody necessarily. They were just shouting their horrific anti-American, anti-Semitic, anti-Western stuff from the sidewalk, not necessarily shutting people down. But the real question is, who is funding? Who is funding this right now? And what kind of legal repercussions can there possibly be? Well, there was an interesting thread that I was looking at last night from a Columbia University Business School assistant professor by the name of Shai Davidai. He compiled quite a thread of videos in New York City yesterday, images and videos of people supporting Hamas, supporting Hezbollah, openly and nakedly supporting U.S.-recognized foreign terrorist organizations. Lots of potential criminal activity there, possible material support for terrorism. Depends on the actual facts of any specific charge, of course, there. And the organization that appears to be behind it, according to this Columbia professor, Shai Davidi, is Within Our Lifetime. So if that is confirmed, then this organization simply must be declared a domestic terrorist organization, because that is what they are. But right now, we are just dealing with a subversive fifth column, the likes of which we have likely never faced in these United States. And certainly yesterday, I will be candid with y'all, I had a lot of thoughts back to Tom Cotton's infamous op-ed, on which he was totally correct, by the way, that got half the New York Times editorial room to walk out back in June of 2020, that op-ed, "Send in the troops." That is what I was thinking time and time again yesterday, watching all this anarchy unfold across America. Tom Cotton, for what his money is worth, sent an interesting tweet last night, to put it mildly. Quote, "I encourage people who get stuck behind the pro-Hamas mobs blocking traffic, take matters into your own hands to get them out of the way. It's time to put an end to this nonsense." Interesting advice from a U.S. senator. I certainly share his visceral rage at this situation. Moving on. There has been a criminal investigation opened by the FBI into the horrific collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore just a few weeks ago. So it was the Dolly cargo ship that brought down the bridge. There is now officially an FBI potential criminal investigation. The probe will look at least in part at whether the crew left the port knowing that the Dolly, knowing that the cargo ship had serious systemic problems attached to it. My own basic instincts on this matter, based on what I've read about it, I do not necessarily know that this is going to be a successful criminal investigation. I think it's entirely possible that this was just a fluke failure, and I'm not entirely sure that there was negligence, let alone criminal conduct. But certainly, this strikes me as the kind of thing that would be appropriate for a disaster of this magnitude. So, you know, the FBI's credibility is essentially in the toilet right now, given the ways that they have abused their power very much, including the issues that we talk about pertaining to Donald Trump right on this show every day, America on Trial. But, you know, for those of you who still have some faith in the justice system, and if you're listening to the show, you might not be one of them, but for those of you who still have some faith, you might take a modicum of solace in the fact that the FBI is investigating the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse now in Baltimore. Shifting gears a little bit and going to the U.S. Supreme Court, a trio of headlines for you when it comes to the U.S. Supreme Court. So first, yesterday, by a 6-3 divide decision, the U.S. Supreme Court allowed the state of Idaho to enforce its ban on transgender surgeries, on chemical castration, so-called surgeries, and irrevocable hormonal treatment and things like that. The Supreme Court allowed Idaho to ban these procedures for minors out there in the state of Idaho. The mainstream media refers to this as so-called gender-affirming care. I refuse to use such Orwellian language as a general rule. But this was an emergency request that was petitioned from Idaho officials, the Idaho Attorney General and Solicitor General's office. And the court, the Supreme Court, that is, by a 6-3 decision, agreed that Idaho could continue to enforce this law while it plays out on the substantive merits throughout the federal judiciary. Interesting that it was a 6-3 divided decision. You had the three liberal justices who objected, saying that the law should have remained blocked in full, which is what it was as a result of the district court. Justice Neil Gorsuch, in his opinion, said that the lower court had gone, quote, much further. A lot of interesting rhetoric in here, by the way, in numerous of the opinions, multiple of the opinions, because you had a concurring opinion as well. Interesting rhetoric condemning the practice of nationwide injunctions. This was a practice that really took off to the point of ubiquity during the Trump administration. They happened to be illegal and unconstitutional from my perspective. You had a wonderful law professor by the name of Samuel Bray, who wrote the definitive law review article on this very topic a handful of years ago for the Harvard Law Review. Sam Bray is entirely correct there. The idea that a single district court judge has the ability to place a so-called nationwide injunction and enjoin a law throughout the country, or even enjoin the law throughout anything other than his own jurisdiction, than his own district court area, is laughable. And I expect this issue to come up again if Trump is to come to power again. You remember that practice where the liberals, the ACLU, plaintiffs like that, try to get these nationwide injunctions from sympathetic judges out in Hawaii, California, or so forth there. Some really powerful rhetoric from multiple of the center-right justices yesterday. So I hope that this issue comes back again. I've been a longtime skeptic of nationwide injunctions, a longtime skeptic of judicial supremacy, the notion that the judicial branch is the final and exclusive arbiter of all things constitutional. I have been a vociferous foe of these matters for as long as I have been steeped in the law and U.S. constitutionalism, and I was really encouraged by some of the writings there in yesterday's opinion. So our second matter at the U.S. Supreme Court here, before getting, of course, to today's deep dive, Donald Trump did go ahead and reply to Jack Smith's brief in the immunity case. That immunity case is going to be held at the U.S. Supreme Court a week from this Thursday, April 25th. Mark your calendars if you have not already done so. So Donald Trump submits a roughly 24-page reply brief here by his excellent band of lawyers, led by John Sauer, the former Solicitor General of Missouri, as well as at least two of my friends who are also lawyers here, signed on this brief, Will Scharf and Michael Tout, some excellent Missouri-based litigators here that Donald Trump has representing him in this immunity case. And the argument that they make in this reply brief is basically what they've said all along, that a former president enjoys absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for anything remotely resembling an official act while he was in office. And there's lots of citations here to everything from Marbury versus Madison to the vesting clause of Article 2, Section 1, Clause 1 of the Constitution, to the Youngstown case, the Steele seizure case from the mid-20th century. Lots of interesting citations in here. It overall is a very cogent brief based on my skimming of it. I ultimately do not think that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to fully adopt this argument. I continue to think that it will be something of a middle ground measure. But we will see. And all eyes right now, aside from Trump's criminal trial in New York, all eyes are starting to turn to this big immunity case in Washington, D.C., going to be held a week from Thursday, this April 25th. Finally, the final bit of news for today's jam-packed Around the Horn segment. There is an oral argument today also at the U.S. Supreme Court. That oral argument today, the Supreme Court is weighing whether or not the January 6th protesters and rioters can be charged with obstruction of an official proceeding. So there are more than 350 cases against January 6th protesters where the feds prosecuting this have included a federal charge that includes a 20-year maximum penalty. It's actually part of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which is the statute that was enacted after the Enron accounting disaster 20 to 25 years ago or so in the early aughts. And the actual legal issue here, it's a somewhat arcane in the weeds debate over statutory interpretation. They are debating specifically, among other things, the meaning of the word otherwise. That actually literally is the statutory interpretation debate, is the actual context of the word otherwise. And to kind of just zoom out a little bit here, the relevant provision in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act that the feds are invoking here to prosecute the J6 rioters is that you can get up to 20 years in prison for anyone who, quote, corruptly alters, destroys, mutilates, or conceals a record, document, or other object, or attempts to do so with the intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding, or otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so. So it is really the meaning of that word otherwise that is the center of this debate between the January 6th rioters and the United States of America, represented by Solicitor General Liz Prelogar, who is a very talented liberal attorney. So that is the actual legal debate that is going to be heard today at 10 a.m. at the U.S. Supreme Court. It'll be interesting to see how much politics gets into this argument as well. If you want to take it seriously, at face value, it is actually a somewhat arcane in the weeds statutory interpretation debate. That's it for today's jam-packed Around the Horn update. Up next in today's deep dive, where else but New York City for day one of Donald Trump's criminal trial there. Stay with us. You don't want to miss this.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. We crossed the Rubicon yesterday, folks. We did it. After more than a year of anticipation, we have reached the point of no return in this American Republic. We are now officially down the rabbit hole of subjecting our political opposition, of subjecting former presidents of the United States, of subjecting leading president candidates for president of the United States, of subjecting all of them to criminal prosecutions. And Donald Trump was in court yesterday for day one of his trial pertaining to hush money payments to Stormy Daniels made by his former fixer and subsequently convicted felon Michael Cohen. on the precipice of the 2016 election. It was day one yesterday, jury selection getting underway in the courtroom of Justice Juan Mersham. That would be the judge who really ought to recuse himself from this particular case, the judge whose daughter, Lauren Mersham, is knee-deep in Democratic fundraising and consulting circles via her role with Authentic Campaigns, a company with close ties to the Biden-Harris operation, a company with close ties to Adam Schiff, a company that is fundraising over $90 million off of its connections and invoking the fact that Lauren Mershon's father is actually the one who is trying to literally send the political opposition, Donald Trump, to jail. You really can't make this stuff up. And my number one takeaway from yesterday's first day at trial is that Juan Mershon, the judge, is not messing around. So they're trying to get the schedule set. That's one thing that you try to do on the first day, typically, of a trial, is you try to say, okay, I mean, I have that coming up. And Donald Trump's a busy man. Last I checked, the man has three other criminal prosecutions, multiple other legal cases proceeding, including the ridiculous civil fraud case brought by Attorney General Tish James. And then he has a lot else going on. The man's running for president of the United States, last I checked. He probably should get out there on the campaign trail. He's got potential debates coming up. Is Joe Biden going to debate him? That's another real question. And then he's got a lot of personal stuff going on as well. So every time that Trump and his lawyers brought this up yesterday, every time they brought this up, whether he can attend other matters, Mershon basically shrugged his shoulders and said, yeah, you know, let's see. So he basically said, can I attend my son Barron's high school graduation on May 17th? Mershon says, let's see. May I skip trial on April 25th, go down to Washington, D.C. to listen to that big immunity oral argument pertaining to Jack Smith's 2020 election federal probe? We'll see, says Juan Mershon. Can I be exempted on Wednesdays when your courtroom anyway is typically dark so I can go out on the campaign trail? We'll see, says Mershon, because it has to do with the fact that the jury is going to be there. So, look, the optics of all of this are very difficult to miss. Donald Trump is bogged down in this shambolic, outrageous criminal proceeding, this 34-count indictment where there's a two-year statute of limitations on the underlying misdemeanor charge, the fraudulent bookkeeping, that they're trying to get around the statute of limitations while simultaneously hijacking it and upping it to a felony because it is allegedly in furtherance of something. We don't even know what it's in furtherance of because Alvin Bragg hasn't told us yet. The whole thing, and the dichotomy of it, the visuals of holding this side by side with Joe Biden on the campaign trail, the Biden regime is subjecting its criminal, is subjecting its political opposition to these Stalinist courtroom proceedings while it can go out there on the campaign trail and campaign for the very swing state and independent voters that the Trump campaign necessarily cannot compete for while it is bogged down in criminal proceedings. It's really absolutely just wild stuff right now. So right now, where we actually are is we're just trying to figure out who is going to comprise this jury pool. And you had hundreds of prospective jurors who showed up to Mershon's 15th story courthouse on Monday morning. Voir dire, the actual selection of jurors did not begin until late Monday afternoon. It was delayed by what we were just discussing, questions about scheduling and some other final details pertaining to pretrial procedural matters. The jury questionnaire itself was a matter of contention, as it always is between the two sides. The judge ultimately struck from the jury questionnaire, asking explicitly about your political identity, what party you are a member of, what your political beliefs are. So what that is to say is that Trump's lawyers are forbidden by their own admission from striking lawyers for openly and unabashedly saying, I am a Trump hater or I am a registered Democrat. They cannot do that. What you can do is you can start to strike people from the jury based on potentially how they look. You can do that. And this is kind of icky stuff, I understand, for some people. But you can do that based on reasonable estimations as to how much of a proxy that may be for what their political ideology is. So, for example, if you see someone with a very, shall we say, short, spiky woman haircut like a Rachel Maddow, you know, you might be able to make a reasonable guess, as Megyn Kelly told me yesterday on her show when I was a guest, that that person probably is an MSNBC watching liberal. If you have someone walk in there with pink hair and purple hair, you might make a guess that that person is an MSNBC watching Trump hater. However, if you have someone walk in who, let's say, is wearing a kippah, is a religiously observant or traditional Jewish man, that person, based on statistics, is more likely than not to probably be a supporter of President Trump. Now, another interesting thing that a friend flagged for me is that while Wednesdays are typically dark in Mershon's courtroom, Fridays are actually live. Now, that's interesting because the Jewish Sabbath comes in on Friday afternoon, early evening. The fact that Friday jury proceedings are live, is that potentially an attempt? Is that potentially an attempt by Mershon and the other leftist hacks involved here to make sure that religious Jews cannot serve on the jury? I'm not necessarily saying that the intention here is anti-Semitic. Rather, what I am suggesting is that they potentially, and I'm just speculating here, I'm just asking questions, as they say, maybe they are doing this to try to make sure that no religious or observant Jews can serve on the jury because they know that religious or observant Jews tend to be supporters of Donald Trump. And you obviously need full unanimity for a criminal conviction. You don't want a mistrial or a hung jury here if you are the prosecutor or presumably if you are the judge. So these are some of the things that are currently going on right now. After 2:30 p.m. yesterday, you had 96 prospective jurors who were escorted into the courtroom. That was the formal beginning of jury selection and voir dire there. The court adjourned for the day just after 4:30 p.m., and they are now back in court this morning. This thing's going to go on. We're going to be covering it every single day. The question that Alan Dershowitz and I discussed with Megyn Kelly on our show yesterday is whether or not Donald Trump is ultimately going to take the witness stand in this case, as he says he wants to do. I do not think that Donald Trump is going to do that. I think that that would be a very bad idea for Donald Trump. Donald Trump is his own man. He is a contrarian, but he also can be a reasonable person. If his first term in office means anything, it shows that he actually can be talked into believing in doing certain things. He was talked out of his own instincts for better or for worse in a lot of different scenarios, whether it was the First Step Act jailbreak law that I personally opposed back in 2018, or the Saudi Emirati Bahraini-led boycotts of Qatar back in 2017 that Trump's instincts supported, but then Rex Tillerson, his then Secretary of State, talked him down from. Trump has shown himself where he actually can be talked into things. I predict that he actually will be talked into bowing down from testifying on the stand. I think that'll be a very bad idea for him, frankly. Dershowitz and I agreed on that point when it came to our appearance with Megyn Kelly yesterday. In any event, we are going to be covering these questions and more every day while this trial is going on. Crazy, crazy stuff. And frankly, above all, just makes me very sad as an American constitutionalist that we are at this point. Just a profoundly sad day and a sad week for these United States of America. That's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, what the heck is going on across the pond? Big news from Brussels, Belgium this morning when it comes to the NatCon movement, of which I'm very much a part. I'll give you the updates when I come back.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. You know, they say that Brussels, Belgium is the center of the European Union, is the center of the Eurozone, it is the center of the European project. It is the bastion, as they say, of European values and tolerance and the rule of law. Well, none of that seemed to be on hand, to put it mildly, this morning, as Brussels police stormed in to the National Conservatism Conference currently being held in Brussels, Belgium. This is NatCon Brussels. They stormed in while Nigel Farage, the well-known British conservative, while he was speaking on stage And they eventually then went back outside after not literally shutting the event down, but rather they just maintained a police corridor outside and prevented new people from making it into the conference. Reports that I saw were that the Edmund Burke Foundation, that's the organization that puts on NatCon. I am a research fellow at the Edmund Burke Foundation, where I work with Chair Yoram Hazony, among others. But the reports that I'm seeing there, because I'm not presently at the conference, I'm here in Florida, but the reports that I'm seeing are that the Edmund Burke Foundation's attorneys couldn't even make it into the venue, and that Brussels police were actually stopping them from doing so. I mean, how outrageously ironic that this is the seat of European democracy and the European rule of law engaging in thug fascist tactics. Is this not thug fascist tactics? Is this not the very notion of rewarding friends and punishing enemies, the Schmidtian notion that they mock many on the right these days for adopting? Is this not literally the exact mentality that they purport to condone when it comes from the other side of the spectrum? It's just, it's too rich for words. It really is. Now, it's admittedly something probably of a potential PR gift for those who are involved there, Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Folks like that, they probably look good. I mean, if your ideas are so dangerous, that's why they want to shut you down. It's that sort of notion there. So it's potentially a gift when it comes to upcoming European elections for national conservative parties throughout Europe and for national conservatism in general. But absolutely wild stuff. The quote here that I saw in a political article, this is from Frank Ferretti. He's a conference organizer from MCC, Matthias Corvinus Collegium, which is a conservative think tank and university in Budapest. I spoke there once myself over 2 years ago. Frank Ferretti says, quote, "It's really something out of a tin pot dictatorship. They're trying to use a technical reason to make a political point." And he's right. They actually went so far as to threaten to shut down the vendors and caterers who are supplying food for conference attendees. This is straight out of the communist playbook. And sure enough, Antifa is actually right now taking credit for much of this. So we'll have more updates for you if I learn anything more. This is all breaking stuff just this morning from across the pond. But suffice to say that democracy in Europe right now is in very, very bad shape. Oh, by the way, it happens to be in very bad shape here in the United States of America, too, if you haven't been paying attention. That's what this show is dedicated every single day to covering. Well, on that note, that's it for today's episode of America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Thanks, as always, for tuning in, folks. We'll be right back with you tomorrow morning.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.